Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Gary Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
I'm
tribulations, through our doubt and frustrations, in my violence, in my turbulence, through my fear and my confession, in my anguish.
The year of the woman on the Hair Radio Show.
I don't know what time it is. Look at here. It's the Hair Morning Radio Hair Show with Gary Hines. It's your boy Smooth Black. I just want to say, thank God for this company, y'all. Y'all better be blessed. The Hair Radio Nation going to the next level, y'all. Get it, 2021. God bless.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air. I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. And I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have 8 arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s. And the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything. You really do. And you outline it there. You put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just some great things historical content, reference. And then my other part, my other part of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection, so of artifacts and things that you know, that document the African American experience, or the African experience, I guess, if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I left it up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb, pretty much all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life. That really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day, and
how old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
point. Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
what is the chaplain, for those of us who don't know? Obviously, we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did a chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like, How does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids,
wow,
their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first year, my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me." And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart, by asking questions. And it's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world. So I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male, growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time. And I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home video, let's say, a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. Is a BBC series, a man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, Part 1, Part 2. The Promised Land, about the move from the South to the, especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it, I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009, and I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So
wow.
That kind of was the genesis to, and then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection. And Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, and plus they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff, also Secret Service 4 years in a row, FBI, just fascinating stuff that
wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors. And I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or Black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, you know, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had like the shackles, if you will, for like that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica. And I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. and he brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shekels they have available, and for them to do that, I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Stephen Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Kerry, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand to cross that no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I tried to bring more of an international view. And because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America, in fact there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it, but it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the Old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also what I've tried to do with the collection is I tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific and nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who have been under the boot of slavery and the trade. And,
and what have you found, Jim Crow for the most
laws.
Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. And the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the Black Code laws, and the Depression, where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, I think I've got problems. Here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big, my ears are too small, my hair is not enough. All that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the internet? I guess I should ask.
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
right now,
if I
were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. Wow. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where can you find one? You know, someone might say, well, I've got everything. No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or, you know, you name the names out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who I just, we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure.
Right. But
it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, "You're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right?" That's what they're telling us.
Oh,
and they said, you're wasting your time.
That.
You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is you can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book, and who are you, and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us some interviews from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology and I think in that direction, I began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence. That all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly has, it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression, just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy while I'm moving from one part to the next, and never to be revisited. But a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go. In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech, if you're from Yorkshire or Scotland, and you're talking with someone who's from London, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment, and I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me his story, he said, when I experienced the moment, when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. And he was no more than about 6, 7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, I rose pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there, and he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. And remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit, and he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye, and as serious as a heart attack, he said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Kerry, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard. What he said to me, and I thought, I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray, I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize. And repair as best as I can. Now, I think that that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out, and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
what's cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, the next-door neighbors, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think it could have a profound impact on our on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that,
wow.
That's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, we had the hibachi grill, and you put the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they catch fire. And
yeah.
So I just think if we can get just some people that are hot coal,
mm-hmm.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And
wow.
My book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement, backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain. Click, 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 and when it's uncomfortable, turn the music off, turn the external stimulation off, and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. Not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come in that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, And then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important? And it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, you know, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot, and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit, you know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Kerry, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this, but I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values. And I detail that in the workbook called If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking an idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, Black History galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com. They can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with let's say an organization wanting to mentor youth. You know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later? You know, what do you do? What do you want to? Where do you want to be down the road 5, 10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5 to 10 years from now? And you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5, 10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial a business together, and I developed a whole magazine project around that that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for. And so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that, and how did you, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone,
exactly.
About the Madam C.J. Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Right.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
Yes. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was.
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks. I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to parocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The first word is four letters. Poro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building. And then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just it's just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first people in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And,
so who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Danny Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionaires of African descent, women, female millionaires in the country.
And that's
just
what
based
I'm getting.
Timing.
Why? How on this earth? I'm trying to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both and all the things that they
no
stand compare. For.
They
absolutely.
Both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's
but
not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head. And felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced, let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became, she was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, clean, it was orderly, it was you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed in 1926 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone Orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he
of course.
He grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's where the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All this time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So,
yeah, G-O-O-D-E. Okay, wow. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work. And so he became a beautician, and of course his songs just took off, and he never went back to it. But
right, amazing. So okay, well that explains a great deal for us on that, because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me, that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
some
that's,
people make great personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business
choices. It's the opposite, exactly.
Good personal choices.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we, you know, we kind of knew a little bit about or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today. And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it. Sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We're going to keep, we've got you now, and there is a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis, because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about, and I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information. I'm just very grateful. Now, I have to say, before we close out, I had mentioned this at the top of the interview. I love the quotes that you've assembled. I don't know who wrote them, but I just love them. And these are just a couple of them that I just said, oh, wow, how great. Patience is not waiting. It's how you act while you're waiting. So that's one. I love that. And I think that says so much. And my other favorite that I seem to have just picked up again from looking at, started at freemaninstitute.com, and I saw this, and it's like, age doesn't always bring wisdom. Sometimes age comes alone. So I just love that. That says it all. So I want to just say you are just extraordinary.
People say I'm an expert in this or that. I'm not an expert. I'm just a student. And so I'll always be a student, learning.
Wow.
Like someone once said that you can't learn with your mouth open. It's just more of a situation. You just really want to. I'm always someone that I want to just learn. Because generally speaking, you aren't learning much when your lips are moving. And so. I just want to be a person who listens at least twice as much than I speak.
I
did a lot more speaking today than I.
Well, that's
than I
okay.
Like to do.
that's exactly what I was about to say. It's okay when your lips are speaking when they're educating so many people, countless folks who need to hear what you have to say. So I am so grateful. Now, are you on social media? We need to find out. Are you on social media at all?
I'm on Facebook. I've got about 16 pages. In fact, there's a page called Black History Collection. It's the only one on Facebook. Got over 10,000 followers on that. and got some very, very cool stuff on that. And then, of course,
well, you're
my
about
name,
to have 10,001.
It says Black History Collection right on the Facebook page. And then,
sure.
Of course, I have my own personal Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with anybody. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and who knows about me and all
okay.
that kind of stuff that's out there.
So we can find you. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have you back, as I said, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Well, do you have any closing thoughts? You've been so kind to just share your perspective on all of this, and just someone who has done so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of inspiration or encouragement?
Well, I do. I think, speaking of the hair and beauty industry, you know, I just see how Asians have pretty much taken over, and I'm not mad at them. I think they just took advantage of a situation that was open and available. I've developed a 10-year plan on how African Americans can take back the hair care and beauty industry, starting from the top down and the bottom up. And I think Annie Malone figures very much into this. I would love to see this booklet get into every beauty parlor, every beauty salon, every barbershop in the country, and have people learn about Annie Malone. And then I'd like to see the most senior people in the hair care beauty industry, from the old guard companies, the new guard companies, come together. In the first year, not even deal with business things, just develop relationship, to take a look at the elephants in the room, to walk through all of that, to deal with that, and then have a united just not a united front necessarily, even though that's important, but united, just be united and to really become good friends and understand how important this is. And then in the second year, start developing manufacturing and then distribution. And little by little, I think that there's a whole willing audience built around Annie Malone's story that could be wide open, because people will not buy black just for the sake of buying black. They want to buy something that is a good price, that's easily available, it is distributed well, is manufactured well, and you just check all the boxes off, and then someone will say, okay, now I'll buy whatever that product is. If it happens to be black, that's what I'm talking about, is to create a whole industry that can, because without the if the consumers are trained and understand what's going on, I think, and then there's a product and manufacturing and distribution all set up in place to deliver it, I think that within 10 years, the whole industry can turn around and it can become something that's well within the African-American community. But I think Annie Malone is the key for all of this.
Well, I just want to remind the folks, and the book that you're talking about, exactly the title and how we can get our hands on
that
book.
It's Madam Walker's Role Model. It can be found on Amazon, eBay, but if they go to if someone goes to Poro College, P-O-R-O, Paul Ocean, Ralph Ocean, porocollege.com, they can see how to order it. And I think it's such an important piece of history. You know, Carrie, I reached out to the leaders in the hair care beauty industry and only found two or three that even knew who Annie Malone was. And I said,
exactly.
I said, you know, that,
yeah.
that this is an important thing for people to learn about her so then they can begin to reanimate her legacy.
Well, I'll tell you something. It starts today. Dr. Freeman, I want to thank you again for being our very special guest right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to have you back to kind of, you know, continue this wonderful conversation. I think it was a great start, and you've helped to peel back just a little bit for us. And we've got some work to do. We've got some work to do, so we're going to have you back. Well, listen, I want to thank you again, and you, please remain on the line, Dr. Freeman. I'm going to close us out here, and
okay.
We're going to chat. All right, folks, keep it right here. There's a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Thanks so much, Dr. Freeman.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at chairwatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines. Stay tuned.
Trying to start a hair industry business and need help? We've got you covered. Listen to brand new episodes of our original radio series, Hairpreneurs, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
I'd like to welcome you all to a delicious place to eat. We call this La Luz Cafe.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have two very special guests joining us today. Well, they're from the world of education. It is my honor to welcome back to the show Dr. Joel A. Freeman and welcoming for the very first time Dr. Walter Milton, Jr. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Good morning. We are honored to be with you this morning.
Yes. Awesome.
Thank you, Carrie. We love being here and looking forward to our time together.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to kind of jump right on in. Dr. Freeman, we're going to kick off with you. You were kind enough to help us kind of launch the Hair Radio Morning Show 5 years ago, literally hundreds of episodes of this broadcast ago. And we're so excited because many of our listeners, you've touched folks around the world with your story. And so we're going to remind everybody about that, but I just wanted to officially welcome you back to the broadcast and how we were able to use that wonderful, wonderful interview as a great foundation for pushing us forward. And we're still here today. I think that's a big part of that. So thank you.
Well, I'm very thrilled at what you're doing and how you've done it, your integrity, your stick-to-itiveness, and it's an inspiration to all of us.
Wonderful. Well, listen, again, welcome to the show. And now I have to turn also to Dr. Walter Milton, Jr. You're from the Rochester, New York area, and you are, when I tell you, I was just blown away at your story when I started to do some research. School superintendent for years, literally. Author. Yes. So education, to put it mildly, is important. So, Dr. Milton, I have to get in there. What, you know, where did this come from, this whole, you know, this journey that you are on, that you've been on? And it's, I'm going to call it a track, I think. You know, so where did this come from in terms of jumping into the education or on the education wagon, I should say?
Well, you know, I had two teachers that impacted my life in ways in which you can one could never imagine. I had a teacher by the name of Adam Urbanski. He was a gentleman from Poland, and he talked about history. He was one of my high school history teachers, and he taught history in a way that you can only fall in love with. And he talked about the movers and shakers of history, the carriers of information, and how we have to learn to deconstruct things and find ourselves in the whole cloak of history. So he planted a major seed in me. Then I had a science teacher. Her name was Cassandra Frierson. And Cassandra Frierson said that I'm part of a history that goes all the way back to the beginning of time. And I was so glad to meet her because I had an experience in elementary school that my teacher attempted to teach Black history, but she started off in slavery. And what happened, it had ushered so much shame and humiliation for me. So that those early years of my life, I was on this quest to find out some truths in history and where I played a role. And Dr. Frierson, or Cassandra Frierson, she said that my past is inexplicably tied to the beginning of time. And so as a result of those two individuals, I went into education, became a teacher, a principal, and then a school superintendent, and decided to step down and start my own company. And then it happened again. And when it happened this time, I said, I'm going to take action. When this whole quest and this desire and this love and passion for history came out, I said, I'm going to do something about it. So Joel Freeman was the first person that I've called. Joel has been a close friend of mine for many years, and I know that he is the curator of many African American artifacts. And I said, Joel, would you go on this journey with me, man? And he didn't hesitate. Here we are, 2.5, almost 3 years later, with a final product, a finished product rather, and our goal is to share our love letter to the world. I mean, this is our divine purpose and our mission as to why we exist.
And that is the reason that you guys are here today. And that is to introduce us to this amazing new book. And I'm going to have to thank you, Dr. Milton, for that. I'm going to have to turn now to Dr. Freeman. I'm going to ask you, Dr. Joel A. Freeman, first of all, again, welcome to the show. And just want to say we are going to turn to you to talk about this amazing new book. We want to make sure and get that on out there, Black History, An Inclusive Account of American History. Tell us about this book.
Yes, as Dr. Milton mentioned, it's a labor of love. It's 1,248 pages, weighs 5.5 pounds. Has well over 2,500 images throughout, and about 500 of those images come straight from the collection my wife and I own. We own over 3,000 items, documents, and artifacts. Oldest piece dates back to 1553. And so we have put together, Walter and I, as you mentioned, we worked for about 2.5 years, putting in 12, 16-hour days and working. I'm telling you, it was just like Groundhog Day every day, just working at it. And And then going to sleep and working some more the next day and just day after day. So it was just both of us look at it right now and just go, we don't even know how it happened, except God's fingerprints are all over it. Right. And we started in ancient Africa. And the reason why we started in ancient Africa is because we did not want to reinforce the notion, either implicitly or explicitly, that slavery was the beginning of black history. We wanted to talk about the mores, the folkways, the hunting, the gathering, the fishing, the industry, the agriculture, the ancient African kingdoms that transcend the current geopolitical lines. And now we're ready for the good, the bad, and the ugly of the last four centuries. And even when we get into slavery and the slave trade, we have a whole section just about slave rebellions. We talk about the trickery used. And we have actual stories of how people were tricked into coming on the ship, and or to be kidnapped to get on the ship. So we wanted to give a whole different view about this that is not normally given, at least that we could find. And then there's a gentle timeline that takes us all the way through to the struggle for civil rights. We then. Once we have included that, then we get into the whole area of the economic system. We talk about arts, entertainment. We have a section on sports, black quarterbacks, the integration of the NBA. And then we have a whole section on 50 states. And it's where we provide some insights into black history in each state. So whatever state a listener is from, there will be some specific just a showcasing of what has happened in their particular state. Then the final unit is all about the North Star. It's over 100 pages where we have a timeline from 1491 on that describes all that happened, our interaction between United States and Canada. And then we tell stories, we share stories from mid-1800s from a book called Refugees that a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Drew went north, and he interviewed a lot of people, and then he put 114 stories, their life stories, into the book. And so In our textbook, we start in Vancouver all the way over to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and everything in between. The Don Settlement with Josiah Henson, and so on and so forth. So it's really a wonderful way to show how people from the South, many suffered from Stockholm Syndrome, many just, just the whole, how does a person leave not knowing where they're going to be going, and if they're going to get caught and maybe get killed or get chastised in horrific ways, and then the fugitive slave laws pushing them into Canada. So we really Walter and I have put together a book that the response we've been getting from around the country has truly been heartwarming. And we are very grateful to be the instruments used to be able to help put this together. And, of course, as we've expanded after the writing was done, our wives are very much a part of this project, and we're grateful to them. And then more people came on that helped with curriculum design, with search engine optimization, media relations, professional development, and many other aspects that helped to, we now have a team of over 75 people that have helped to bring this to bear.
Well, I'm going to say, I think you have at least 76. I'm on board, too. Make sure and add me on
okay.
in to that list. I saw that extensive list on your site. I was, at phd65.org. I was
quite impressed. Listen, I want to make sure I get the title right. I don't. I think I just introduced it as Black History, but it's actually Black History 365, an inclusive
correct.
Account of American history. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, we landed on 365 because many times people view Black History Month as the main time to talk about Black history. But we decided that this is something that is an inclusive account of American history. That's the subtitle. And we also quote from a gentleman on the back cover. He's a quote on the back cover. His name is James Baldwin. He said, "American history is longer, larger, more various, more beautiful, and more terrible than anything anyone has ever said about it." And that's really, when Walter and I saw that quote, we just said, that's got to be on the cover. It's because that encapsulates what we have done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have to say, as a matter of fact, Dr. Milton, I was going to ask you, being, you know, of course, an educator as you are, you know, and being out in the school system, how did that play a part? Because I'm, you know, I just imagine that you were close, you know, you were real, you know, you had a real front row seat to what the kids needed, you know, to what the students needed to learn. So I'm going to ask you, how did that play a part, or did it play a part in how you kind of, you know, decided to come up with this idea that you guys have, you know, worked on?
Well, it played a major part. What I saw in my years of education and what I still see now in working with school systems across the country is that there's a direct correlation with the lack of culturally competent instruction and educational approaches to the negative impact that has on student achievement. We also discovered that the lack of historical content has been a significant influence, sir, of negative outcomes for Black students and communities, including lack of self-awareness, lack of self-esteem, lack of intrinsic motivation, decreased academic achievement, truancy, discipline referrals, and even some cases some criminal activity. Because what we found when our young people, not only Black children but all children, when they have an understanding of who they are, where they came from, and the impact that their ancestors have made on this world, it just increases all the negative things to turn right into the positives because we make that connection. And so what we found and discovered that the world, particularly America, is begging for something like this because of the past, our history that we have and how those things still impact us to this day. So we wanted to really look at those things. We really wanted to look at the whole impact of the incarceration system and how that connected to education. And what we found is that there's this critical gap. And we believe that we have a solution for this gap. One of the things that we really focus on, and Joe will probably talk about that a little later, I'll just introduce the concept, but we said we need to develop critical thinkers, compassionate listeners, fact-based, respectful communicators, and action-oriented solutions. And we believe that BH365 will serve as an impetus to make that happen and to make our world a better place here in America and to bring about a great deal of healing because we clarify things and misconceptions that we've been operating on for many years.
Just, I'm blown away, and I have to say, Dr. Milton, and I was really touched, and I know we're here, we're going to absolutely get into every single aspect of Black History 365, you guys' new book, which is being used in the schools, but I have to draw some attention to when I came across one of your earlier books that talked about this. The title is A Matter of Life or Death, Why Black Men Must Save Black Boys in America's Public Schools. And I know you've written a couple of books, but that was, I read a little bit of the synopsis, and I was just very impressed. So thank you for all the work that you are doing, that both of you are doing on this incredible topic that, believe me, even
you know, I could put this on every day, you know, for years, and it would still just be scraping the surface of what needs to be done. But it's a wonderful thing to do as much research in it, and you guys can hear it. You've done a lot of research. I see the work, and it is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. So thank you both for that.
Thank you so much.
Yes, well, very much welcome. Well, listen, if you guys, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's my pleasure to welcome these two incredible educators to Hair Radio. And Dr. Joel A. Freeman, he's been with us before. We're so excited to welcome him back. It's been 5 years. And he's joined, of course, or we're joined, with Dr. Walter Milton, Jr., who we're also excited, a New Yorker, a fellow New Yorker, to the broadcast. And now, Dr. Freeman, you're in Maryland area, correct? Aren't you still out in Maryland?
Yes, not far from Annapolis.
Okay. And so we have a lot to talk about, because just trying to catch everybody up a little bit, and then I have some more questions for you, Dr. Milton. But just to kind of bring everybody up to speed, Dr. Freeman, I recall that you started off early on, and you were a chaplain for, wasn't it the NBA? And you did all these amazing things and just had such I think it was, well, what seemed on that interview, just a deep understanding for folks at an early age. And that's what I got from that. And I was just quite impressed and went on to create that whole space with all these artifacts that you have that chronicle the lives of folks all the way to Africa and here. And so I'm just very impressed and, you know, just happy to have you here. So what can you tell us about your collection these days? Anything? Of course, we've got your book, which is going to be a big part of that, Black History 365. But what else can you tell us about the collection that you have amassed all of this? And I know you have pictures inside the book, inside of Black History 365.
Yes. Yeah, it's a big part of the book and a big part of, I think, the contribution, because it's exclusively available to the book, the images. There's now over 4,000 high-resolution images.
Amazing.
And anyone who tries to put together something like this without images, it's just very difficult. And what people, when we went to the printers in Ohio who manufactured this book, one of the young men, I don't know how long he'd been working there, but maybe a decade or two or close, 15 years maybe, and we were just talking with him, and he says, yeah, he says, when I came in this morning, I thought I was working on a National Geographic project. and so the collection is made up of over 3,000 items. We've done two exhibits at the United Nations. We had over 1 million visitors. I've done three in concert with the White House. I've done two at the Clinton Presidential Library. I've done a number with Secret Service at their headquarters in D.C. and a number of other venues around the country. And it's just been wonderful. And when Walter called me about this project, I didn't have to think about it, because I knew intuitively that I had been building this collection, and it's perfect for a curriculum in terms of the types of items. I would pass over 200 items to get to that 201st item that would help tell the story. And so I was very selective about the items that I collected and brought together. So it's kind of a unique type of collection, and I think when people get the textbook and they start looking at the images, especially the first two units, because the first two units are about ancient Africa and slavery and the slave trade. So I have a number of items. For instance, I have one item when I was in Elmina Castle in Ghana on the banks of the Atlantic Ocean, and I met with the village elders there. And they voted unanimously to donate a set of shackles, an actual set of shackles from Elmina Castle. And I was truly humbled and honored by that, because I don't think they did that very often.
Exactly.
And so those are the kinds of stories behind many of the collection, pieces of the collection. Just had over 75 given to me, and you know, had to acquire a lot of things myself. But this gentleman, his father worked for TWA Airlines.
Well, so did I. Wow.
Oh, really?
Yes. Small world.
So he was responsible for all the continent of Africa back in the 40s and I
wow.
think 50s, right in that range. And he had, of course, being with working in the airline and into Africa, he had many people sourcing original artifacts. We're not talking about stuff for tourists. I mean, original, like doors on a chief's hut, you know, and shackles and masks and figurines and all sorts of items. Well, his dad passed away. Of course, his dad, working at the airline, could ship it back to California.
Sure.
And when he passed away, my friend told me, he said, I'm going to make sure that there's a number of these that are in your collection. He had this sense of urgency. And my friend Pat passed away about 3 months ago.
Oh,
and he had this urgency
wow.
to get these items to me. And he wasn't even sick, you know, just had a massive heart attack, and he
wow.
was gone.
That's...
And so I feel very honored and am holding those items very carefully, and we have some of them pictured in the textbook in honor of him and his family.
Wow, that's very nice. I have to say, just when I look at this amazing book, Black History 365, and you mentioned 1,248 pages. I have to wonder about the schools. Like, how have the folks received this book, the textbook? How, Dr. Milton, let's ask you that. How has it been received by the teachers and the students, for that much?
They have received the book extremely well. Many of them are not only saying that this is for 9th through 12th grade students, many of them are saying this engages all ages. This should be a book that's in every household across this country, in particular, and in general across the world, because it has so many features. It really does. Also, Morehouse College down in Atlanta is going to be one of the first colleges launching the textbook in January. We are also in a conversation with Hampton University in Virginia that's going to do that. And then we have had a number of people who have purchased personal copies of the textbook. So we believe that it has this book. Throughout the pages, it's a healing mechanism. I just want to quickly go back, if you can indulge me for a quick second,
sure.
To talk about these images. And I don't know if I've ever shared this with Joel, but it was an extremely tedious task to find the images. And he, like he said, he would go through 200 images just to get to that 201 to say, hey, this is it here. I mean, it wasn't anything that was easily done. I mean, it was arduous and it was daunting. And in some cases, I saw and felt the pain that he went through just to make sure that it was beyond excellent. Because the images not only tell a story, the images bring the words alive of that book.
Wow. I'm blown away. I love just as you respond to this, and you're just painting an amazing picture of Black History 365. Now, how do folks find this book, Dr. Milton? How do folks get their hands on a personal copy or an edition for, you know, like you said, it should be in every household?
Absolutely. Well, we're asking the world to go to BH365.com. .org. That's BH365.org. And one of the major features that we have in the book, besides the many QR codes because we wanted to have a strong integration of technology. We've also embedded music in the book from award-winning Grammy producer by the name of Dr. Kevin Cates, affectionately known as K.O. And K.O. has developed 40 songs. He's a producer for Jay-Z, T.I., Rick Ross, Drake, Snoop Dogg, and a host of others. So we have an expert who has put together amazing songs, and he got the words from the text. And they are just powerful. I mean,
is
they will be
kind of like a soundtrack for the book?
Yes, yes, you can definitely say that. And as Joel said, we have a Hamilton in the making.
Wow.
I call it an anthology of Black history, because basically we've done is, you know, he's doing a song for each chapter, lifting lyrics from the text itself and the concepts surrounding the text. And so you start in ancient Africa and bring it all the way up to George Floyd, you know, some of the things that are happening in our culture today. It's like ripping pages out of the headlines, the way we've done it. And then we have an e-book version that is available, and so that will allow us to even add more items, you know, as things happen in our culture, so that we can continue to keep it updated and in the ebook version.
And that's important, right, always to make sure that, you know, I keep going back to, I forget whose book it was, but I like that word living, like living history. It just keeps on going, and I love that. I have to tell you, this is just amazing. We're talking with the authors of this amazing book, the folks behind Black History 365, this amazing, incredible book. We're talking with Dr. Joel A. Freeman and Dr. Walter Milton, Jr. So we're real excited to have them with us today. 1,248 pages. This is a huge book, but it is packed with so much information and knowledge that we need. And I can't say it enough. I really can't. I think this is a game changer out there. Dr. Freeman, why was this so necessary, though? You know, there are tons of books, folks will say, you know, I saw the books that were out there when I was in school, and those history books seem just fine. What do you say to folks who say something like that, Dr. Freeman?
Well, every time there is a racially charged incident in America, there are some very smart people, passionate people who get on TV. You know, we affectionately call them talking heads. And you can almost, if you're running a betting game, you could bet that someone's going to say, in so many words, we need to have a national conversation around the topic of race relations in America. And one gets the sense that 3 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, perhaps that same person will be saying the same thing. And you know, people protest in different ways. We have comedians who use comedy expertly to protest. Some write books. Some will write poetry. We remember the protest songs of the 60s and the protesting in rap music and hip-hop music. And some protest by demonstrating, marching. The way Walter and I protest is by coming, by putting in the 2.5 years, 12, 16-hour days to come up with a solution to the education gap in America. Our protest is, we look at it in terms of a solutionist approach, so that we can start these conversations. So we have something in the textbook that is proprietary to BH365, is we have something called the Elephant Experience. Now, the elephant experience, and we could spend a whole show just talking about the elephant experience, but it's a whole idea of, okay, we have these topics that people don't like talking about. It's uncomfortable. And topics that cause some people to talk at or past each other. Some people block each other on Facebook or other types of social media. And so what Walter and I wanted to do is to come up with a process. Cause why an elephant? You know, connection with Africa. Hey, there's an elephant in the room. Probably your favorite joke in second grade was, hey, how do you eat an elephant? One spoonful at a time, one bite at a time. So there has to be a process, a schema, a methodology for dealing with the elephant. And then, of course, the hippocampus of an elephant is extremely large, and their EQ matches and rivals that of chimpanzees and some species of dolphins. So it has to be something that's sticky, something that is that engages, not just momentarily, but for the long term. So that's what we did. So topics such as 3/5 of a human being, Uncle Tom, the N-word, reparations, are we in a post-racial society after having a black president for two terms? Can a white person ever truly understand the black experience in America? Scientific racism, lynching, and should we tear the statues down? Things like that, topics like that, that we have a certain process that is a healing process, not a divisive process, where students can be, where we have professional development trainers that train the teachers in setting the environment so the students can create an environment that allows for these topics to be dealt with in a way that is beneficial. And where there are where there's a binary choice, we have QR codes that provide the pro and the con, you know, the for and against views. And so it invites people outside of their confirmation bias bubbles and gets them into a realm where they begin to see the other side, and or at least hear the other side. And then using the Socratic method, the students engage around it and come up with individual or perhaps even collective understanding about something. So to get back to your original question, the need for something like this, and the response we're getting from principals, from educators, from superintendents, from people who have, historians. I was talking with a historian the other day, and he was saying he's up to page 500 already.
Oh, wow.
In the textbook.
Wow.
And he was saying that he was just delighted. He said, oh, my goodness. He's checking out the QR codes. He's engaging with it. And he just said, I just cannot believe a resource like this is finally available. This is what I've been talking about all my life, and a resource like this.
Absolutely.
So, when it comes to the distinctives, we believe that we have something that is very uniquely crafted. It's designed for healing. It's truth-centric. It has the music attached to it. It has QR codes, so it's engaging with technology. We start in ancient Africa, so we're not reinforcing implicitly or explicitly the notion that black history started slavery. So we bring all these elements together that we've discussed, and we brought it into one textbook. Now, we're also planning to create a K through 8, so K2, 3, 5, 6, 8 grade bands. Those are coming. And we're using the 9 through 12 textbook, which, by the way, engages all ages. We're using that backbone information to then be contextualized in the 6 through 8, 3 through 5, and K through 2 programs. So now, getting back to how I started this response, now we're starting to get people to kids to start talking about the tough topics in a contextualized manner from kindergarten on. And hopefully we'll be able to measure results with the students, the teachers, and perhaps even the parents. And, 3 years from now, 5 years, 12 years from now, to see what kind of impact this can have on our society that is so polarized politically, and to really get people to engage coming through the lens and the gateway of history, which an inclusive account of a history, so that we can somehow see healing happen in our country.
I totally agree. I was thinking, as you were just explaining that, I'm thinking to myself as well, that's the thing. We're all, when we look back at how when we were in school and taught history, And it really does, I hate to say, but it really, that's kind of where you, what you get is, for Black history, anything that's relating to Black culture is usually starting with slavery. And so I so appreciate what you have just described in Black History 365. I so appreciate it because just to be able to connect back to Africa and just see a place in, folks of Black descent, just African descent rather, just figure into everything. So it's amazing to me, and I have I'm kind of blown away just to talk to you about it. So I'm excited for folks to get their hands on Black History 365. It is important. It's an important book. So what else is there out there? You and Dr. Milton, as you mentioned, there is music involved in all of this as well. Can I get my hands on some of this so I can play some of those songs on the Hair Radio Morning Show? We'd love to get some of those music files over here. That
well, it's awesome. It's probably the music is so good, and I can't wait till you hear it. And I think that maybe Joe and I could send you a demo copy for your ears only, because it's going through the process of being produced and recorded, and so we're going through all the legal aspects of that. But in the meantime. We can give you something that you could look forward to coming out, and I think that we would love to have you once we get the green light to play it on your show, because it's going to be a Grammy award producing set of music, and I give all the accolades to God first, but I give them to KO. Who was used by God to do this, to do this work. I mean, the music is incredible. And as the kids say, it is highly dope.
Awesome.
I think that, you're going to love it. You really are. And, Joel and I are just so honored that you allowed us to be here today to share this, one of the most passionate things in our lives, you know, Black history. And Joel talked about us being utilized as a vessel. You know, we had many moments that we worked throughout the day, and we'll talk, you know, how do we get here? How do we do this? Where did this come from? And we just know that this was all divinely inspired. It really was.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, I'm going to just, before we close out on this part today, I definitely want to just make sure everybody is aware of, again, how to get their hands on Black History 365, your website. Please give us that again. Dr. Freeman, Dr. Milton, please tell everybody how to get their hands on this amazing book.
Yes, BH365.org. BH365.org.
Okay, and that is just awesome. And we're real happy about that. Yes, indeed. And also, just to let everybody know that you guys, this is not the end of Black History 365 on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm so happy and honored that you guys are here. We're announcing right now just an interview arc where we're going to have a few shows at this time, and then we're going to roll out something long-term that kind of can, you know, take parts of this amazing book. We're going to say Black History 365 is the name, and we're going to cover it a little bit more in depth. We wanted to just kind of do a quick introduction, if you will, and talk about some of the things that are inside of this amazing book. And I've got to tell you, we're going to be able to get into some of, before I let you guys go today, we're going to tease this because I want to get your opinion of things that are happening today and how you can tie them to Black History 365, Black History 365, and I know that you can. And we're going to have that a little later for you guys, or we'll put it on our website as well. So that's just a nice little tidbit that we'll get into a little later. But first, again, I want to thank you. Before we go, Dr. Freeman, why don't we start with you? Is there any last thoughts or anything you want to kind of close out this portion today of our interview? Anything you want to leave us with? Like those amazing sayings that you used to have. You used to give us all these wonderful sayings that I always love. Anything that you want to tell us today?
Well, I think that the main thing I wanted to, that comes to my mind right now is that this textbook is transcendent. You know, as we say in the subtitle, an inclusive account of American history.
Inclusive.
And so the whole idea of the term inclusive, I want everyone who's listening to realize that this is an opportunity to engage all ethnicities and ages, you know, in terms of young and older generations, different backgrounds. Some are come from more urban areas and some come from more rural areas, socioeconomic aspects. We've tried to include everything. Plus, when it comes to STEAM or STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and I like to put in arts and then M for mathematics, we've provided different aspects. Sorry?
No, I was saying yours is STEAM, not just STEM.
Yeah.
STEAM, like that.
That's right, STEAM. There's STEM and STEAM, and I prefer STEAM. But it's so if people are looking for this to engage on all aspects, you know, we have some very interesting topics. I was talking with someone just recently, and she was saying that she says, "Well, I'm an educator," and she said, "My response to this once I started looking at it is I don't really know that much," we don't want that to be the takeaway. But we want it to be the incentive that when people approach this topic, you know, and we talk about the Great Migration to the North and then to the West, you know, that in all the different topics, the Harlem Renaissance, and we even have a whole section in there, Carrie, that I think you'll love, is what about taking back the hair care and beauty industry?
Well, that's coming up in our next segment.
We have a whole section on that.
I thought I'd
spring
that on you a little later. Yes.
So that's on my mind. That's all. It's the inclusive nature of the textbook. Walter?
365.
Well,
yes,
I just wanted to say we didn't have an opportunity to talk about our advisory board, but hopefully we can do that next time we come back on. We have incredible people like Kathy Hughes, Benjamin Crump.
All my favorite folks. Oh, wow.
Yeah, Agabriar Bryson, the grandson great-grandnephew of Annie Malone.
Yeah,
you'll know
yeah.
Annie Malone. Joel has done a lot of extensive work regarding her and a host of other wonderful people. But I want to leave with celebrating you, Carrie, because I know that you bring so many people, you give so many accolades, you know, through your work. But I want to give you an accolade, you know, just my short time of knowing you and hearing you and hearing about you and researching you as well, you are truly a merchant of hope. You carry hope for so many people's lives, you know, and I can hear that hope in your voice, your heart, your soul, and your spirit. And I just want to wish you the best always.
That's very kind. Thank you very much. It means a lot. I appreciate that. And I have to tell you, when I hear those names and you know, Kathy Hughes, she's been my, you know, starting out in radio and being one of my favorite folks in radio. And back when I didn't see many folks who are African-American doing that and just being such a big forerunner out there, I'm just blown away. And Benjamin Crump has been on my show. He's been on our broadcast just like you guys. And so I had a chance to chat with him, of course. And even Akbar, I think the gentleman, I've chatted with him as well. So, and Annie Malone, all of this comes full circle. So I just have to say I'm blown away. And again, I want to thank you guys personally. This book is important, Black History 365. The website is bh365.org. You need to get a copy of this book. And we're going to make sure that you do that. And if you need to be put in touch, and I got to say this last thing, Dr. Freeman, I have to say, I had told everybody, I'd put it out on Facebook that you were coming back to the show, and I posted all this about Black History 365, the book and the picture and all of that. And my brother, Dr. Leroy Hines, who the listeners out there know, he's been with us many times. He's a trained economist and all of this. He's deep in history, studying all of this. And he rarely, you know, pipes up to ask me about anything. You know, he sees my radio show, you know, guests from time to time. This is the only time he said, you must introduce me to Dr. Freeman. He didn't know about you at that time, Dr. Milton.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay.
And I said, I kid you not. He said to make sure. So I said, well, when I speak with you, I'm going to get your permission, but I'm going to introduce him to you guys. Because I think that he's, Dr. Leroy Hines, he's been out there, and as I said, the listeners know, he always comes on and gives us all kind of, you know, in terms of current affairs and all that wonderful good stuff. But I have to say, I think he's definitely, you guys, definitely going to have a great time. That's all I can say. That's amazing work. So thank you so much. And you guys out there are going to have to stay tuned for the next part of this episodal arc with these amazing guys. Again, it's my pleasure to thank Dr. Joel A. Freeman and Dr. Walter Milton Jr. for being part of this broadcast today. Again, the book is Black History 365. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Stay with us. Hi, I'm Kerry Hines. I want to shout out to superstar hairstylist, industry legend, and my friend, Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Inc. He's a hair biz educator, entrepreneur, and yes, he's known for coloring, cutting, and complete hair care services for the whole family. And now, you can hear him right here on Wednesday mornings, live at 8:30 Eastern, all the way from Southern California. Now, he's sharing a few trade secrets and so much more right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Now you can listen to our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network and shop all in the same place. Go to hairradio.com. We've got around-the-clock hair and beauty radio talk. And while you're there, buy your favorite books, hair products, tickets to live hair and beauty events, and much more. And if you'd like to feature your products in our hairradio.com website store or be a guest on the Hair Radio Broadcast Network, contact us at hairradio.com and reach the world.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. I have a very special guest joining us. Now, she's from the world of nutrition. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome Jackie. Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast.
Good morning. Good morning, Kerry. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, I do want to clarify, you're not just nutrition. You are actually all about healthy living. You have to tell us more about it.
Yes. I mean, I do like to cook, and that's part of the some of the things that I like to do, Jack Rabbit plant-based cooking. But I also just like to talk about healthy living as well. You know, I want to be able to share some things with your audience and, you know, about healthy living. I want to be able to introduce, you know, nutrition. I want to talk about exercise, water, sunshine, temperance, air, and rest. And, you know, just trusting in the divine power and how important all of this is regarding our health and our nutrition. So it's just a whole gamut of things, you know. Eating right, nutrition is the number one thing, but there's other things that we need to be doing that we need to incorporate in our lives each and every day.
And what are some of those other things, too, that we should be doing?
Some of those things that we should be doing outside of nutrition is, you know, we should be exercising every day. And when we think about exercise, we don't necessarily have to think about it as something like, you know, having a membership at a gym. It can be something as simple as walking every day, which is probably the best thing that, you know, we can do as far as exercise, you know, because we're stretching when we exercise, we're moving our limbs when we exercise, you know, we're getting sunshine, which is part of that, you know, staying healthy. We're going to intake some water because, you know, we need that hydration. And we need rest. And so in order to get that exercise in, we need to learn how to properly, you know, rest our bodies. You know, we need to
No, I was just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yes. Well, what I'm getting from all of this, Jackie, is that for me, I look at making a big pizza pie. And each slice represents one of these things that you've just mentioned right here. And if you remove it, then it's missing a piece of that pie. It doesn't incorporate the whole pie. Somebody's ate a slice, basically. So you want to really start to focus on pulling everything together, and I think this is just awesome. And I want to back it up a little bit, you know, for our listeners out there. Let's just let folks know, you will be joining the lineup right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, I'm proud to say. So it's really great to have you coming on board to share these regular segments on healthy living. And again, healthy living incorporates so much. It's not just one little slice, pardon the pun. You know, it incorporates so many things, as you've just pointed out. So, Jackie, I kind of want to back up a little bit. Let's kind of start with this. Tell the folks where you are based out of. How did you become a healthy living czar? How did all this happen? How did this all start for you?
Okay, sure. Well, I'm based out of Minnesota, and it all started back when I was let's just say 16, because 16 is when I gave up beef, meat, and I've always had an interest in healthy living. And so, you know, as the years go by and as you get older, you realize, you know, I need these things as a part of my life in order to, you know, live the best that I can in my best life. And so that's kind of how it all got started, you know, just me stopping eating beef and then just, you know, doing reading and just, you know, trying to cook and just live, you know, healthy. And
well, what made you give up the beef at 16?
Well, years ago, my mother had gone to a place where she was learning on nutrition and health. And so she came back and she talked to us about it. And I think I just decided, you know, not to eat beef anymore. I never was a big meat eater growing up anyway, because I just didn't like the texture. You know, some of us are texture eaters, you know, like, say, for an example, some people just hate tofu because it's just too soft. And so I just do not.
I'm raising my hand right now in case you didn't know that out there.
Right. So, you know, texture sometimes has a lot to do with things as far as why we eat things, why we don't eat things. But, yeah, so I just decided to give up beef and, you know, just reading things about beef and knowing that it wasn't really the best, you know, meat for us at that time. So I figured if I was going to start somewhere, let me start with the beef. And we never ate pork, so my next meat would have been beef.
Wow, that is just interesting. So I find this really fascinating. And I think that the fans out there, and you guys, you'll be able to pass along whatever questions you have for Jackie, who will be talking about this with her healthy living segment right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show each week. Now, I want to be clear. So your 30-minute show within a show will be starting soon on our network. So we're going to keep you guys out there informed so that you'll know when to tune in. And until then, you can reach out to Jackie right through our Salon TV Network app here at Hair Radio, so which is just awesome. You can download the app at the Google Play Store, Salon TV Network, and you'll be able to connect with Jackie through that. Now, I'm excited about this Jack Rabbit Eats. So this is the wonderful healthy living segment that is going to be plant-based cooking. Now, Jack, I got to ask you, Jackie, what's the name Jackrabbit all about? The listeners would never let me live it down if I didn't ask you the name Jackrabbit. So what is that all about?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Carrie, because, you know, it's just my name is Jackie, as I mentioned, and I'm the youngest of six children. And so my family called me Jackrabbit. And so that was a nickname that was given to me by my dad. So when I decided to do plant-based cooking, it had nothing to do with the fact that rabbit You know, they don't eat meat. Nothing at all. It was just fitting for the fact that I eat plant-based, you know. And so that's where the name Jackrabbit Eats plant-based cooking comes from. So it's just a family nickname, and I just incorporated it into what I like to do.
Well, it gets no better than that. That was just the divinity of it all. I just think it's amazing. It really is. Well, listen, I am excited to have you here on the network, as I mentioned. What would you like to see yourself bringing to this whole piece of the pie? And why did you want to come to our network? Share that with everybody.
Well, I just wanted to be able to relate a message out there regarding healthy living and just let people know that it's nothing, you know, really hard to do. It's something that, yeah, we have to try to do every day, you know, regardless whether it's eating right, our nutrition, whether it's exercising, whether it's drinking enough water or, you know, making sure we get enough sunshine, you know. I just want people to live their best life and live as healthy as you possibly can, because I think it's just very important for us as, you know, as people in this world. It just gives us clarity in our thinking. It just introduces us to an awesome way of, you know, just being healthy and sharing that healthiness with others and, you know, and just being happy. And when we're happy, we want to share things. I mean, I do. I like to share things with people when it makes me happy and makes me feel good.
Awesome. Can say it no better than that. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much. Did you have anyone you want to shout out to before we sign off?
Sure. I want to give a shout out to my family, you know, my husband who has been behind me with this and who has encouraged me to go ahead and do this, Michael. I want to give a shout out to my sister, Alicia, who has also encouraged me to, you know, to step out there, get out of my comfort zone. And just anybody that I know, I can't call everybody by name, but just know that I love you and that if you're listening to this broadcast, I hope that it brings you inspiration and I hope it brings you encouragement.
It gets no better than that. However, it does, because you're also going to be doing a series of videos of cooking demonstration videos. Again, plant-based, I call it healthy cooking. It's healthy living segment, and you're going to be doing a version of this exclusively for our Salon TV network. So as long as you have our app, you'll be able to watch Jackie on camera leading you throughout your healthy living. And again, she's going to be talking about a whole lot of wonderful things, and we just so support you, and we look so forward to all of this. Again, I want to thank you for being with us this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Carrie.
All right. Keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Stay with us.
This is Louis Martinet, and I listen every day to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
This is Crystal Jones Bond, and we are celebrating the Year of the Woman on the Hair Radio Show.
I don't know what time it is. Look at here. It's the Hair Morning Radio Hair Show with Carrie Hines. It's your boy Smooth Black. I just want to say thank God for this company, y'all. Y'all better be blessed. The Hair Radio Nation going to the next level, y'all. Get it, 2021. God bless.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines. Stay tuned.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois. And that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few Black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about Black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. after the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our Black community my life. The Black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most Black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring Black hair care back. There are great Black hair care companies that exist, Black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the Black community can own the biggest Black hair care brands, that the Black community can own Black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in Black neighborhoods, and Black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a Black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the Black hair care products that only Black people use, and they are not owned by Black people. So I've issued the Black-owned hair care challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-owned hair care challenge, and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy Black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a Black-owned company.
Welcome, people. We are the All Natural Corner. 12 Jobs and Roll. We cater to all natural body treatments, body products, skincare at the All Natural Corner. Yeah, we got things for health, wealth. Why not make your beauty more beautiful? At the All Natural Corner. We got sour sap moringa. Everything that makes your body. This is the All Natural Corner, 12 Charleston Road, Willenboro, New Jersey, 080-46-267-670-9457. We got all natural products. We love the community. The All Natural Corner. You can get it all
at the All Natural Corner.
All you can come and get at the All Natural Corner. At the All Natural Corner.
At the All Natural Corner.
Tell them what you think.
Yes, I was there and I talked to the manager and he let me know that All Natural products was good for my body. He had 102 minerals for me and I was good, you know. I'm going to come back all the time because it's all right at the All Natural Corner. I can't say anything else.
Now you can listen to our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network and shop all in the same place. Go to hairradio.com. We've got around-the-clock hair and beauty radio talk. And while you're there, buy your favorite books, hair products, tickets to live hair and beauty events, and much more. And if you'd like to feature your products in our hairradio.com website store or be a guest on the Hair Radio Broadcast Network, contact us at hairradio.com and reach the world.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's Wednesday morning. It's August 11th of 2021. It's our show number 599. Before, of course, we get to show number 600, which will happen on Friday morning, August 12th. So just in a couple of days.
But first, I want to bring back to the show. I want to bring back a gentleman who is widely known as a, I call hair extraordinaire. He's the gentleman who knows everything about cutting, coloring, and all-around family hair care, all the way live from Southern California. It's our friend to the Hair Radio Broadcast Network and Hair Radio Morning Show, the one and only Smooth Black, a.k.a. Joy Ballard. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Kerry Hines. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you? Now, you heard us say it's been almost, well, today's show number 599. That's kind of like a milestone all by itself. What do you say, Smooth Black, when you hear something like that? And you being a big part of that.
Well, Gary, you know, progress, you know, it's amazing the journey that you've taken, you know, and I can't wait till it's the 6,000th show, you know, God willing, but approaching 600, you know, that's putting in work. So you've aired and been able to promote a lot of professional people, and we thank you. You know, continue to broadcast to us, and we're just looking forward to hearing whatever you have to offer, sir. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. And speaking of kind words, for you guys who are just joining us for the very first time, I want to remind you about Smooth Black's appearances on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Again, it's Wednesday morning, 8:30 New York time. We're not going to say what time it is in California, but it's early. 7:30 for you guys out in Central Time Zone. Now, I do want to say this. You usually kind of kick off your 30 minutes with some most inspirational talk. Now, let me tell you, I absolutely, we missed you while you were away because I look forward to those Wednesday mornings when you are sharing so much wonderful words of encouragement and advice. So today, so much going on in the world, you know, especially here in New York City. What kind of words that you might be able to impart with us today? And then we're going to jump on in to all the Hair Talk Fray this morning. So what do you have for us, Smooth Black?
If I had anything, I just want the people to be encouraged, you know, and the greatest gift that God has ever given the man was his ability to think. And, you know, I say, I think, therefore I am. And today I just want you to think about what thoughts go through your mind. And I encourage you to continue to read and pray and develop a relationship with Jesus, the Lord and Savior. And if we would just, you know, learn to esteem others higher than ourselves and, you know, become a servant. You know, that's my job in the hair industry. I'm a servant, and God blesses me by serving people. But if we continue to just lift up one another, pray for one another, especially in this time, the COVID and the new strand that's out, you know, we the devil is defeated. All we need to do is just adhere to, you know, the rules and the regulation and apply ourselves, and everything's going to be all right. So be encouraged. Just know that God has everything in control, and I'm just excited. You know, every day have great expectations of what, you know, just going to happen that day, and I take it one day at a time.
Wonderful. Well, listen, my expectation is to have that great Barry White voice you've got over there. Out there, Smooth Black. My goodness, you know, I tell you. Well, listen, I am so happy to have you back on, as I mentioned earlier. Now, I want to jump on in because, you know, for those of you who are really just kind of getting to know Smooth Black today, I've got to tell you, he is widely known, renowned around America. And a legendary career. Now, this is not something you just started. You go back some decades with hair care. And you started off, I think, now, you know, just remind everybody, you started off on the barbering side. And then you moved on over to hairstyling. So tell the folks about, no?
You know, that's what the story was, you know, you believe in fate, Kerry.
Absolutely.
And God has things already predestined for you. We just got to fall in place. And once you find out, you know, your purpose. And, you know, God gives us gifts and he makes room for us. And my ability to cut hair, I learned in the military, Gary, because I started cutting my hair because I didn't like the way they cut my hair. And, you know, we'd be in the weekend, we'd be in training exercises, and we'll come in on a Friday. The barbershops are closed. I go in the bathroom, grab my mirror, and hook myself up, and I'm ready to go to the club. My friends be like, who cut your hair? I'd be like, I did. But it seemed like every female that I dated had something to do with hair. And believe it or not, I got married in the military. My wife was a model and going to beauty college. So when I got out of the military, I was planning on going to barber college, and she would be the cosmetologist, and we would have a, you know, great family business. But that didn't take place, Gary.
I worked it out. Well, there was a different plan.
Oh, yeah, different plan. So, you know, got to learn how to adjust in life, you know, and keep it moving.
Yes.
But my love for hair, once I got out of the military, I went and I tried to enroll in barber college, Gary. I went down three times, and three times he did not enroll.
I mean, how did that make you feel? Wow.
Well, Gary, you know, I already knew how to cut hair, you know, in my mindset. You know, it wasn't too much they can teach me about a bald fade, a high tight bald fade, the military cuts. I was already doing those. I was going down Highland Avenue in San Bernardino, and I seen Richard's Beauty College, and I went in there, and I was like, okay, I guess this is what, because my ex-wife, she was, you know, going to cosmetology school, but back then she was a weaveologist. I tell her she was into commercial hair and hair augmentation, and, you know, and I always wanted to, you know, play in her hair. She would never let me. So I went to beauty college. So when I got there that day, I said, okay, this is it. This is it. And 30 years later, Gary, I'm still behind the chair.
You are still behind the chair, but doing some great work as always. And like I said, your reputation precedes you. I mean, everybody knows who you are. I love the word, the phrase you just said, mentioned hair augmentation. That's got to be one of my favorites. I love it. Okay, so listen, I want to talk about what's happening for the summer and the fall. That's why, folks, they will kill me if I do not talk to you about some wonderful hair care tips and all of that. So going into the fall, I know and I believe that everybody always talks about fall colors. So is this the time where they should look at these wonderful, you know, autumnal type colors, you know, browns and, you know, earth tones and things like that? Is that what happens, or is it just business as usual?
Well, basically, I believe things are business as usual. You know, clients, you know, I believe that the stylist can really dictate what trend they want to set at that time in the season. Because as we promote our business, you know, I'm always introducing my clients to new, you know, just say, notice we've been wearing this same haircut for a while. How about a change, you know? And, you know, always, you know, implement something
do
new.
What do they say when you say, well, you kind of been wearing the same stuff? I mean, laugh at that or say, okay, you know what, it is time to, like, you know, let's try something new?
Well, I have some clients, it's just like, say you're on set of a movie and you got that hairstyle, and every time you go on set, that hairstyle has to be the same. In life, there are people like that. They'll get hairstyle, and they're set for life. You know, so I'm like, to me as a stylist, it's good money, but it's boring to me over time because I like challenge. I want to color. I want to cut. I want to change. I want to. Every time you sit in my chair, I have one universal haircut, but I can give you 101 different styles with that one haircut. And what I found out is that once your clients believe and trust in you, you can almost have your way with them as far as creating a look and a style, what color they're going to wear. Because they basically, you know, as a, let's say we're professional hairdressers, so we are doctors, we have a PhD in this thing. But as a professional hairdresser, when they come to me, I make suggestions and, you know, and I want to stay trendy. So I want them to, whenever they leave my chair, I always tell them, if you don't get a compliment today, I didn't do my job.
Wow.
You know,
you know what? That needs to be the title of our book. Okay? That I love that. And that is amazing. Now, it just reminds me, right? It reminds me I remember I had a barber here in New York, and I would go to my barber and I would tell him, because I kind of felt that we lose touch when we're sitting in the chair at the shop. And I said, after a while, we don't realize that we're, you know, always getting the same styles and it's just become routine. And I said to him, I said, listen, if I ever sit in this chair and ask for the same style and you yourself know that nobody else is getting this style anymore and that this style is passing, please, please do not cut my hair or give me the same style. You do something else or let me know. And he made that promise. And one day, that day came. No more bowl haircuts. The old Shemp look from Three Stooges. I had to do away with that. So listen, I just tell you, so it's kind of nice. So there's a partnership between the hairstylist and the client. There should be anyway, right?
Honestly, as we say, as a cosmetological entrepreneur,
I love that.
Over the years, I'm, learning to develop relationships with your clients. I mean, it's business because in my business, I've always rented a booth or now I'm leasing a space and I create my own business within a business. But at that time, I'm not a Supercuts, a Mastercuts, a Fantastic Sam's where people come in and they would just get assigned a stylist.
Cookie cutter.
Yeah. And, they never, the client doesn't care. All they want is a haircut, and they probably, like a microwave, want to be in and out. But as a personal stylist that I develop a one-on-one, my first thing when you come to me, we do a consult, and, I'm building a clientele to where every day of the week I'm trying to fill a slot. As a stylist, I want to know when I come in on Tuesday how many clients I'm going to do that day, and I pretty much can calculate my income. And, and when I get done with that day, put the money in the bank and, establish a business. Because so many stylists now are not doing business. We do hair. We do great hair. We pay bills, but we're not doing business. And encouraging stylists today to really get to know the business side, open their business account, not just taking the money, put it in their pocket and spending it. It's about building and growing, especially 2022-23 and beyond. We got to be ready because the laws are changing, Kerry. And
exactly.
They're trying to make, oh my God. It's a lot that I want to share. I think we touched on it a little bit at one time, but to the point they won't even have to have a license to barber anymore.
We must have ESP because that's exactly what I was just thinking. There are quite a few states out there. I received one even from Texas the other day, an alert for things like this where, for you guys out there who are not necessarily in the hair biz or the industry, it's overseen by each state. Each state's a little different. How they operate cosmetology. But what is kind of troubling for me, and I'm sure for you, and just pretty much all of our fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show, as you just said, is that they're trying to deregulate the industry, which means, do away with the licensing for the hairstylists in some places. How does that make you feel, again?
Well, as a cosmetological entrepreneur and self-employed, I don't work for nobody. What they're trying to do is regulate because during the pandemic, they really got a glimpse to see the revenue that our industry brings in. And, there's so many stylists that, we make good money, but they don't report all their income. And they're trying to make sure that we're going to in a place where you can be controlled. We can put a price. We can tax the haircuts. We want to know how much money you're making that day.
They want more because, there's been kind of the misconception that, there's a lot of underreporting, if you will.
I want to buy a $500,000 house. I can't report. I only made $40,000 this year,
Yeah, I got you. Wow.
So, but from a professional standpoint, building your business, building your portfolio, getting your life in order, because your gift can take you only so far, you know. But now what do you do with the money that you're making, and how can it benefit you in the end, you know, especially with, you know, being self-employed, you know, I challenge stylists to make sure they have a life insurance, they get them a health plan, and, you know, basically take care of themselves. Aflac's a good one. In case you get hurt, you get paid while you're off. You know, there's so many aspects that I've seen a lot of stylists get sick and not able to recover because they weren't prepared, Gary.
Wow. I'm blown away. And you've been able to avoid a lot of these pitfalls. How were you able to do that, Smooth Black, a.k.a. Troy Ballard? Well, how were you able to avoid a lot of that?
Well, I've been blessed, you know. Even as a young stylist coming in, I was inquisitive and wanted to know. And it didn't take long to know that I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. When I went and worked in my first salon, and I was paying booth rent, and I was doing the calculations of 18 stylists in here at $125 a booth, and I looked at the space of the building, and I was like, okay, I just got to find me a space, get me some chairs, and open some doors. But, you know, it was even more than that, because now I got my business. I got to obtain a lease the building. Then I had to get my establishment license. Then I had to go and get my bank account, get a business
Absolutely.
Account, and just set it all up. And, you know, getting with the Chamber of Commerce, the Black Business, whatever they could give me to help benefit my business, I was looking forward to. So over the years, you know, just watching other owners and, you know, asking questions and making sure, look, I want to stay in business. I don't want to be in trouble with IRS. Learning how to, you know, run your business. So over the years, you know, I'm still growing, Gary, and I'm still learning. And, you know, it's a lot out there.
You are, listen, I'm going to just let you folks out there know, Smooth Black is an industry superstar. You are known from coast to coast. And a lot of this has to do, for those of you who are just kind of joining us, we're chatting with Smooth Black this morning. You guys know him also as Troy Ballard, all the way from Southern California. He's with us live this morning. He's up and with us live. So I was just about to say, folks know you because you go out and you do a lot of things in the way of education, just kind of like what you're doing this morning with us here. You're giving us an education in the hair industry and the business mm-hmm. of hair. So talk to us a little bit about that, some of the experiences you've had talking to people and representing brands in the hair world.
Oh, well, you know, since I'm here on this part, you know, I can give a shout out to Design Essentials who gave me my first
box. Oh, of course. Design Essentials.
Yes, they, McBride Research Laboratories, Cornell McBride, they were awesome in giving me an opportunity to learn how to be a platform artist. And what the company did for me was gave me an opportunity. I had to fly myself to Atlanta for 2 days of education. And in them 2 days, they had an outstanding program with the distributors from every state in California to cater that represented their city and the distributor. And we all came together for an educational symposium in which they would instill in us, teach us advanced haircutting, product knowledge, getting to know the company and the mission statement, and just being able to be in front of my peers. And it was a challenge because, you know, they put you out there real quick and they want to know how well you can communicate or be able to articulate the product in front of an audience. You know, so if you got stage fright or anything like that, it's all going to come out. So, but if you got chosen there, you first came as a candidate, then you became an associate, then it goes to educator. So, you know, when I left that company, I was an educator. And it was a beautiful thing. It gave me an opportunity to travel the United States. I've taught in New York, Detroit, Pueblo, Colorado, everywhere with Design Essentials. I was with that company for a decade. Then I was able to transition to, and God rest her soul, Miss Linda from the Violet Products out of Jackson, Tennessee. Now, black-owned company, and I became an educator for that company, which was a real small company with a great product. I mean, I still love it. I still use it today. And it was a blessing just to, you know, be able to represent a brand in a way that, you know, they paid me well. I was at the Bonner Brothers show 7 years in a row, Carrie.
Oh, so we have to shout out Bernard Bronner and the family,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my God, yeah. But, you know, it was a blessing because the benefits other than just, you know, going to work every day is great. But being able to travel and to be around your peers and be able to, you know, share, you know. And then,
now, you know, we've got to tell folks, if you've never been to a Bronner Brothers hair show, you have got to go to Bronner Brothers. It is just crazy. I mean, the lights, the music, the hairstyling. Mm-hmm. The amazing hairstylists and barbers and product companies, and it was a turning point for me at my first Bronner Brothers hair show, and I'm very grateful, and I love them very much. We wouldn't be here had it not been for Bronner Brothers. So
yes,
good
sir.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, listen, for you guys, again, if you're just joining us, I did want to ask you about one thing, Troy Ballard. He's with us this morning. If it's Wednesday morning, if it's 8:30 Eastern time, 7:30 Central, he's with us live on the air all the way from Southern California, out not too far from L.A., what, maybe 60 miles or so, something like that, in that arena. I think just to give you guys a little bit of an idea. Now, I want to say, because we have a show on also that kind of brings together and does a lot of work for veterans. And as you were kind of talking about this at the top of today's broadcast, I wanted to say, my goodness, I forget that you were a veteran. And also that kind of sparked your hair career. What's the, you know, what's the challenge in, you know, I hear a lot of folks who are in different parts of the service always bring up about the hair. How big was that, and do you think it's changed now and all that?
Well, you know,
with regards to hair care and the service.
You know, a part of our, I can say our BDUs, our battle dress uniform that we used to wear every day, you know, we wear lids. You always have a hat on, you know. So, you know, for the men, it was important to get the taper. But for women, it was always different, you know, because they would have to have their hair pulled back into a ponytail, you know, and off their shoulders. And so, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. But women, basically, you know, because I served in Germany and Korea, but being able, you know, to just observe the women was different because, you know, most of the time their hair is pulled in the ponytail with the hat on, you know, and you know, we're ready for it. But once that, you know, like any... I had one young lady who was stationed in Virginia, and her family's out here when she would visit, and she would come, and the girl had hair almost to the small of her back, but, you know, wore it naturally, but kept it in a ponytail all the time. So she would just come with me once a year to get it straightened, conditioned, and cut, and, you know, go back to work, you know, pulling it back in a ponytail. But I'm talking about healthy hair because she took care of it, though, you know. So that's
Well, listen, I just want to say thank you for that. We're going to have to get you on Vet Talk Radio Show with Michael Alvarez.
Right.
Listen, yes, indeed. For you guys out there who are going to continue, of course, we want folks to follow you. Your show, this broadcast that you guys are listening to right now, will replay over on our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming site at hairradio.com. So, again, it's HAIradio.com, just one R, and it'll replay on Saturday at 3 o'clock Eastern time. So for you guys out in California, that's noon, and for you guys in Central Time Zone, that's 2 o'clock. So please, please, please go there, and you can listen to us. We're on around the clock anyway over there all the time, every day, broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting. As we pointed out, we're coming up on 600 shows. Our 600th show will be Friday morning. We're celebrating right here on the live on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And Smooth Black, we're going to hear from you on Friday also. I'm a little birdie told me, so we're real happy about that. Now, right?
Yes.
So I'm real happy. Yes, thank you. And we've got some surprises for you also in store and so forth. So listen, I want to also just, we must check in with the family. We talked about balance and all of that early on. You have to balance family with your professional duties. How is that? And has that been a challenge for you?
Oh, funny you would mention that. You know, school season just started. And my son is in the second grade, and my daughter is in kindergarten. And, man, Carrie, you know, the things I always commend single women, you know, because I'm a single parent.
Yes.
And
yes.
For the mothers, I take my hat off to you, because now I really understand the heart and everything that you do to get the kids prepared just for the day. As soon as I get off this phone, Carrie, is getting them up. Got to be out the house by 7, be at school by 7:20. They'll have breakfast, but then, you know, making adjustments, because I just got my daughter enrolled yesterday. So my son started on Friday. My son started on Friday, and he didn't get to go to school, so I took her to work with me. So I was like, oh, I got to get to school.
That.
I did everything I had to do, but I had to jump through hoops. But just, you know, for the mothers, you know, paperwork, you know, all that paperwork.
Wow.
You know, keep all the forms together, you know. It's like, okay, but paperwork got to be right, you know, and going down to the enrollment and getting them into a new school. It's been a challenge, but, you know, even now I have to adjust my schedule because my daughter gets out at 11:50, so I got to pick her up, bring her back. Then my son gets out at 2:20, you know.
And
so
then
I
still got to do work today at the shop?
Yes, sir. So, you know, it's a challenge, but God makes a way. That's what I tell you. You know, what we put in is what we're going to get out, and I'm in it 110%. So, you know, my kids have to succeed, and that's why I get up every morning.
Wow. Well, I tell you, first of all, I just love hearing your kids. Usually I was telling Troy Ballard before we went on the air this morning that I'm so used to hearing them in the background, I forget that you're 3 hours behind.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very early in the morning out there in Southern California. Well, listen, we just love having you on the show. I've known you for many, many, many years. Let me just go ahead and disclose that many, many years, and long before you started your official career in the hair business.
Yes.
So it is a great pleasure and honor to see that you've come this far with all that you're doing. And we just love you. We appreciate you, Smooth Black, a.k.a. Troy Ballard. So now what closing out words are you going to leave with us on this Wednesday morning, August 11th of 2021?
Well, Carrie, thank you for having me. And I just want people to know this. It's just, don't forget to tell the Lord thank you. God has been too good. He wakes us up every morning, starts us on our way, gives us an opportunity for a great day. And remember, as a man thinketh, think on good things, positive things that are going to uplift you and motivate you and keep you, you know, because God is good. As long as we seek ye first the kingdom of God and all of his righteousness, he said, all of these things will be added unto you. God already knows what we have need of. We just got to seek him first and acknowledge him in all our ways, and he's going to direct our paths. So to everyone, I thank you for an opportunity just to share, especially God's word, because he's been too good. He wants you to tell it and, you know, and tell somebody that you love him.
All right.
And give him your smile.
Awesome.
And, you know, let's keep moving on in Jesus' name. Amen.
All right. And on that note, just a reminder, we'll be back on Friday Morning Live. Tomorrow's my birthday. We're taking off. So we'll be back. Thank you so much. We'll be back on Friday morning, 6 to 9 Eastern time for the big 600 celebration. Thank you so much, Troy Ballard, Smooth Black.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys soon for the next broadcast. All right. Make it a great, great, great Wednesday. All right. Thanks again, Smooth Black. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.